He was king at five card stud. The stranger's game was five card stud. He was hard to beat. Rather play than eat. Long as it was five card stud.
Hi, Eugene Napick here, your agent in Toronto.
Hi, it's Candy here, undercover in Chicago. And I'm going to introduce the idea that we are going to do a mini episode, with the idea being that we might stick to one topic. I'm not entirely sure I can promise that, but I will, you know how my mind works. I like to jump around a lot. So let's see how it goes. I've stopped watching a program on the Illuminati right now in order to come here and talk about a movie we both decided to watch last night.
That's right. We decided to watch a movie that came up in our discussion about gambling the other day. And it's a movie which is called Five Card Stud. It's a 1968 movie starring Dean Martin, who also sings the fantastic theme music.
It is. It's great.
It also has Robert Mitchum, who plays more or less Robert Mitchum. And it has Roddy McDowall, who's really fantastic in it. And it has Inger Stevens playing Lily, Catherine Justice as Nora, and one of my favorite actors ever, Yaphet Kotto as George.
Oh my God, I almost died when I saw him in the movie last night. I had no idea.
Me too. He looks so young there, doesn't he?
Oh my God, he looks so young, but I freaked out because, you know, obviously, I mean, Homicide. I mean, you and I both are
exactly.
Big Homicide. And I just couldn't even handle he was in the movie. And for me, he stole the movie.
Yes, he was the best character for sure.
He was the best character and the most interesting character in a way for something that was a traditional Western in many ways, coming from the director Hathaway, who had done many traditional Westerns. He was almost the revisionist part of it.
Yes, I think the movie, unlike most Westerns, I think, really explores different kinds of moral ambiguities. And the different characters have codes, and the codes are different, and they come into contact.
Well, that might explain why they wanted to blend a murder mystery with a Western, if it was about moral ambiguity. It's not film noir, although Robert Mitchum brings that feeling of film noir because of his role in Night of the Hunter and Cape Fear. Immediately, like you said, he plays him.
He looks like, aside from, he doesn't have the love hate tattoos, but other than that, he's dressed just like in Night of the Hunter. Whenever they have him featured in the movie, the lighting changes, I think, and it's more high contrast.
It is high contrast. I think you're right. And I don't know whether it's he wearing all the black clothes or not, but you know, you did a great job of introducing some of the actors. The other thing is the basic, let's talk about the storyline, is that it starts with a poker game and someone cheating.
That's right.
And during that, they all get mad at this one guy who's cheating. I actually didn't realize for a few minutes it was Roddy McDowall. I mean, I knew the face. And then when I realized it was him, he really played against type. I thought that was a great role of his. So they're so mad about this cheater that a bunch of the guys from the game take him out and they hang him from a tree or a river or something. And they always use the word lynching. I actually went and had to, you know, because that means defined by a group of people hanging someone, which I couldn't help but feel very uncomfortable with. Because one of the characters, Yaphet Kotto's character, you know, really made a point about it being a lynching.
Yes, and he's the only black character. And there is a note of racism in something in there that Roddy McDowall says.
Yes.
That he doesn't like him because he doesn't like his color.
Yes, yes. It's very awkward, very uncomfortable. And I guess that movie was trying to, because it's so conventional, the lighting is just like you know what kind of movie it is? It's the kind of movie that you watch when you're a little kid and you're homesick from school and maybe no one's even noticing you. You're asleep on the couch and you get to have the TV on.
Yes.
It's one of those kind of movies that you accidentally find. One of those movies, you know, almost I had one of those movies. It was the Saint Massacre, Saint Valentine's Day Massacre. It changed my life as a child. I was just like, what the, you know? And I never realized until I lived in Chicago that it was Chicago. I never really thought about the movie, or it came back up because in some of the restaurants they'll put famous gangster pictures up, and okay. They had that up there. Anyways, it's that kind of a movie that you just stumble upon. I made a list of some favorite poker movies, and that was not on it because I don't think I really had seen it.
Right. And of course, you need the poker game in order to have the film, to set up the whodunit. But right. It's not really about poker.
No, it's not. A lot of poker movies are not about poker. Yes.
Although the character of Dean Martin is very much, it's very important that he's a gambler and he has no roots.
Right. He's a professional gambler. He's a professional poker player and he travels. I've heard it called saddle tramp.
Right. And it's a job. At one point in the movie, when he comes back to town, the woman who runs the saloon that he frequents asks if he's going to be playing cards. And he says, well, a man's got to work. And she says, if a man don't work, he ain't respectable.
That's right.
Which is really interesting kind of cool. Because she has this whole moral code as well. She has prostitutes in her saloon, but she doesn't really like it. Right. She looks down on the prostitutes, but, you know, it's good for business. You have to have it. But she would prefer not to have it. And Dean Martin, you know, he's like in the bathroom or something when the guys go out to do the lynching, and he comes out and finds out from George, the bartender, what's going on. And he gets really upset and he says, you don't hang a tin horn for cheating at cards. You run him out of town. Like he's got this specific code. That's what you do. Right. And interestingly enough, the Robert Mitchum character, who plays the brother of the cheater who is lynched, shares that idea. You know, he was just cheating at cards a little bit. You don't hang a man for that.
Right, right. That is interesting that they both share that.
Yes, yeah. Except that Robert Mitchum has to seek vengeance for it.
Right. And if I understand correctly, we could look at him as bluffing. Because he's playing a preacher. I don't think he's really a preacher at all.
No, he behaves like a gunfighter, doesn't he?
Right, but he's a very good, when he gets on the pulpit, he's pretty pious and he has some good delivery.
Yes, and he uses a gun.
And he uses a gun.
Yes.
Right.
A Colt, which he says his first name is Samuel.
Right. I did a little looking around. I looked at this one article by Martin Harris, who's a reporter for poker. And he's a PhD and teaches poker at University of North Carolina. And he said movies associate violence and poker. They're the ones that teach us that the two go together, card playing and conflict. And I thought that was kind of cool. He said the first Western was by Thomas Edison in 1899, poker at Dawson City, and it's in Canada. And that violence has started right there. Westworld, the 70s movies plays with that. And in the TV show Westworld, they have a poker game, but it's within such a bigger game that you never really care about the poker game in a lot of ways. Right. It's like that in movies. It's just a setting.
Sure.
It's just a reason to be playing. The rules of poker, it's kind of funny, seem to be in the movie Five Card Stud. There's that idea of how you deal with the rules of poker. Do you kill a man for cheating? No, you don't. And then this goes into the rules of society. And I love it that Dean Martin just leaves. He's like, hey, this is not a cool place for me. I'm going to get out of here. He tries to walk away. And while he's gone, gold is discovered.
That's right.
I don't think the movie played that up enough. I really thought they could have had that in there a bit more.
Yes. And not only is gold discovered, but there's a strike. There's a strike. So the miners have been unionized.
Right.
And there's a strike. And Dean Martin says, I've seen strikes before. They eat a town alive.
Correct. Right. And the bartender that you talk about, the saloon owner, she doesn't like strangers. Yet I think the movie could have used a lot more people because the mystery would have been more interesting if we'd had a few more characters. It was pretty obvious what was going on, who was killing who. Because one by one, while Dean Martin's out of town, he finds out from his friend George, the only black bartender in town who has a job, they're good friends, and he tells them, look, two of your guys have already been murdered. It seems like they're killing the players in the poker game that killed this guy.
That's right. And so, he's also very loyal, and he always tries to do the right thing. He goes 100 right. miles to get Dean Martin, and he gets him to tell him to get away. And Dean right. Martin says, no, no, no. When someone's coming after you, you don't run away. You go back and face it.
Totally.
Right? Once it's again, totally he's got this code.
Yeah. Well, I love the other part of his code was pretty amazing, too, because I think they say, well, I'm going to have one of the bad guys. It's Roddy McDowall. I think he goes, you know, he's going to come into the game and we're going to have a drink together. And I think George says he's not going to have a drink with you.
Yes.
And he doesn't. And it's just a chill down my spine. It reminds me of the Ellen and Bush thing. I mean, I don't want to get too much into that, but that sure. feeling of like, do we drink with somebody who has done something really wrong? No, we don't share a drink with them.
That's right.
We don't have to be rude or nice. We just don't have a drink with them. That's going too far.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the other really interesting thing going on was with the two female protagonists, Lily
oh
and
my
Nora.
God. Oh, my God. That
and
was
Nora
crazy.
Is, I mean, I was thinking of them as like Betty and Veronica or
definitely.
Ginger and Marianne.
Definitely. You
know, Nora is.
I love your cultural references. They're so,
she's so young and innocent and she's been kissed, but that's it, right? But
yeah.
Lily is, although they never say it, she's clearly a prostitute and a madam.
Totally, totally she's a prostitute. And, oh my God, okay, so I have to go look her up. I didn't know anything about this woman either. Secretly, she was married from 1961 till her death in 1969 to a black guy.
Oh, interesting.
And it was secret because she thought it would ruin her career, or that's one idea. And they actually had to go through a trial to figure out if it was true or not. And she killed herself or OD'd on barbiturates. I'm not really sure. I think it was called a suicide. She also was a method actor. And she had also worked as a burlesque girl before all of that, before she became
wow.
an actress.
Very interesting. Yeah. I really love the interplay between Lily and Nora, because they come together when there's a gunfight or just yeah. before there's a gunfight, and they realize that they like each other.
Right.
Right. They both right. have eyes on Dean Martin, who happily has sex with Lily, although it's right. implied, right?
Yeah.
In a barbershop. Well, yeah. Miscellaneous, $20.
Yeah. Right. Right. Oh, okay. There was a sign saying how much a haircut was, how right. much a shave was. And at the bottom of the list was miscellaneous, $20. But it's funny because the two girls were like on Jersey Shore. Steg and I watched Jersey Shore. And as soon as the women pull out their lip gloss, you know a fight's about to happen.
That's very funny.
It's like they got to get all sexy to comfort the guys after they fight, you know?
Also interesting is that Dean Martin, the gambler,
yes.
is perfectly comfortable having sex with Lily, mm-hmm. but he doesn't want to get too close to Nora because he sees that that's the pathway to marriage.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want anything to do with that because he needs to be rambling around gambling. That's his job.
Yeah, domesticity is death.
Yeah, certainly for yeah, that totally. Character, right?
Yeah, but it is cool that they had the women having a camaraderie. That was really good. They could have had a terrible cat fight. It would have been just terrible. It was really cool that they actually had something in common. And I think it also was not just marriage he was afraid of. I think he didn't want to lead on somebody that he didn't feel he should be with. Maybe I'm reading too much in there, but she's like a good girl,
yes.
you know?
Yes. And
he knew he couldn't be with a good girl.
That's right, because he knew really all that he wanted.
Yes. Yeah.
So my question...
That barbershop was incredible. I think it's worth seeing the movie. Listen, it's not a great movie, but it's not a horrible movie either.
No, it's
There's
not.
So
it's,
many
it's
good
very,
lines.
It's very entertaining. And because it has yeah. so many different levels of moral ambiguity going yeah. on in the same movie, there's a lot to discuss.
Well, that's the thing. I think with when a good movie, you go to a good movie and you're just so worried about its aesthetic value. There's something absolutely freeing about this movie. I actually thought the direction was really cool in a lot of different ways. The way, you know, the carts were set up and some of the murder scenes were set up. I thought they were really inventive.
It's also very well paced. Like
very
you just
well
motor
paced.
Through the movie and it's over and you go, wow.
I mean, I
fast.
Can't believe there's not a remake. That's a movie that would make a great remake. And you have enough people in there and you put more people into the cast that just adds it a little bit more, that sense of tension a bit more. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter who the killers are, you know, because you do figure it out. You kind of know once you're watching the film, it's pretty obvious.
Yes, of course.
But the suspense is waiting for them to meet each other.
It begs the question,
yeah.
looking at all the characters, are there any characters who are pure good And are there any characters who are pure evil?
Well, I think the Reverend, I think Robert Mitchum might have been evil. He did have some, he was just going around killing people. If it was too much to kill somebody for cheating, it's too much to kill the people that are killing the people for cheating. It's just, it's about that level of excess. Yes, and,
but he didn't want to kill just anyone. He's like Omar in The Wire. If they're not in the game, you don't want to hurt them, right?
So he
was pretty upset because he ended up killing George on the word of the Roddy McDowell character, who said that he was part of the lynching, when in fact George wasn't.
Well, did you also have a sense? I mean, I don't know. I just thought there was like some interest. There always is in the old cowboy movies, but some homoeroticism. I thought it was pretty interesting. Like the strangling bedroom scene was a bit like, what's going on here? But it did add to the, like, one death was in a bag of flour or a bushel of flour. Like there were some inventive murders in there. There was strangulation by barbed wire. There were just some really funny things. Also, Dean Martin, he's a little bit older. He's 50 years old, apparently, but he had a kind of a mellow charm. He wasn't super crazy, and he looked really kind of tired, but he also had a lot of life to him. And I really liked some of his clothes. When he had the beige clothes on with the black boots, the black gun, and the black hat, I was like, damn, that looks good.
Well, I mean, he was always a really suave kind of character. I think in a number of those movies that he did, and he really handles himself pretty well in this one. I like him much better in this movie than, for instance, in Rio Bravo, where he played a guy who was drunk all the time, which is kind of the Dean Martin stereotype.
Right. That is true. And I think the other thing about the movie is that, realism, maybe you and I, we tend to feel a little bit differently about that. I don't really need realism or highbrow to get myself totally emotionally involved in a movie. It can be a pretty bad movie and I can get pretty involved in it. Or, listen, I watch Hallmark TV sometimes. Sometimes you just want a good, solid, told story that, all the answers are given and you're not working too hard. This movie, even though it wasn't perfect, it really did deliver a lot of good things. The poker game, most poker games are not very realistic. It's not really about poker. I was fascinated by the glass box he had of his game that he had obviously won.
That's right. And the question was, what is the down card? Is it the Ace of Diamonds?
What's the down card? Yeah, and how come he was traveling? He's on a horse all of his life. He's carrying this glass shadow box around with him, and it had like the poker table green behind it and a nice glass frame. I mean, how was that happening?
Well, they were pretty easy with the realism on that. He rode a horse. At the beginning, you see him coming across the wide western landscape, crosses the trout stream coming into town, right? And boy, did I ever want to fish that trout stream. It looked beautiful.
I bet. Right?
But when he leaves town, he doesn't leave on his horse. He leaves on a stagecoach. We don't know how he gets back into town, but once he's back into town, we see him riding around on a buggy.
Right, that is true. I never really analyzed all that, but you're right. He did use many forms of transportation.
I really love the gunfight scene as well, where he got away by grabbing on underneath a buggy or a wagon or something.
Oh, that was awesome.
I mean, that was very, very well done, very well paced.
It was.
And really fun. So, I would say overall, it was a better movie than it should be, right? They tried to make a whodunit, a Western, and a film noir all kind of jump together with some romantic interest thrown in.
Right.
But I think it was nicely written and it was nicely directed, and it turned out to be a better movie than it really ought to have been.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. And again, I want to emphasize this barber scene. Boy, if you opened up a barbershop like that now, you'd be a millionaire. I mean, it was all these pretty ladies in there. I mean, obviously it was a whorehouse, but it was a pretty impressive a room building for our sex workers of the Old West.
I wonder if historically barbershops were used as brothels.
I don't know. I don't know. I thought barbershops had a kind of a medical association to them at one point, and that's why that stripe is outside, the red and white stripe. I don't know where I'm getting that from. It's from something I read, but I seem to recall that it had to do with that and that you were some kind of a healthcare associate.
Yes, but although usually the doctors in Westerns aren't really the best guys.
Oh, they're awful, aren't they? I know. Yeah. Here, have some oil and a mustard plaster and do this and I'm raping your daughter while I'm at it.
In Deadwood, the mm-hmm. prostitutes always worked in the saloons. And true. In most of the TV Westerns, it's mm-hmm. implied. Like in Gunsmoke, there's Miss Kitty, right. who's always hanging out in a bar. And nobody ever says that she's anything but a proper lady, except that you know that she's a hooker.
Well, it's so funny you should say that, because you mentioned that at this woman's saloon, the traditional saloon, and there was another saloon opening up, which was going to be overtly with women in it.
Yes.
I thought the other woman, the first woman, she said something like, I've got cards, poker, whiskey, and no women, or no ladies. Maybe she said no ladies. And I took that as she didn't allow women in the bar, but I mistook that joke that yes. it wasn't any ladies. She did
That's
have
right.
women.
But
in
she
it.
Changed
yeah.
her mind. And it was because George told her that if, you know, you're going to be put out of business here if, you mm-hmm. know, you don't get in the game.
Okay.
Right. And okay. so she was, you know, the next thing you see is like, there's all these women with the guys in her bar and it's busy. And, you know, she's making money hand over fist in her bar at this point,
right.
but she's not like really thrilled about it.
Right.
You know, not right. so upset that she's not going to have prostitution in her bar. She's fine with it if she has to.
Right.
Right. It just isn't her preference.
Right. Did you know that I think I gave you a book, Cowboys Full or something like that. I did not realize that poker had so much history. I'd read that book by, I'm not going to remember his name right now because I'm a fool. But, you know, that poker had really come from the United States. It was and it's associated with every president has played poker and made money at poker. And it comes from a French word, poke, that was a card game. But in the United States, they really elevated it and created it as a lifestyle.
Interesting.
Nixon paid his college by playing poker.
So poker is the American gambling game.
Yes, it
and
is.
And banjo is the American instrument.
There you go. Both from other countries, though.
Well, the banjo is kind of like a lute-type instrument from West Africa called an ikonting, but it's not quite there.
Okay.
When it came to America, it changed and it gained the fifth string. They didn't have the fifth string in Africa, and its shape started to evolve, and it was no longer the ikonting, it was the banjo. So although it had African roots, I think the banjo is an American instrument.
Interesting.
But I digress.
Do you, you know, also during the movie, the other thing, and I think it goes back to being a kid watching these movies when you're at home and you're unsupervised and you're not feeling well, and you know, I always had the feeling like something's happening here that I don't understand. And I had that last night. It was weird. I was like, what is the subtext of this? There feels like there is one, because, you know, a year later was The Wild Bunch. And Peckinpah was already admired with Ride the High Country. And I think this filmmaker wanted to kind of make something that was, you know, gritty, like it had some realism like Peckinpah.
But he was saddled with the more traditional format.
Yes, and it's that's something to think about: is can we have those kind of messages being dealt with when we're trapped in a traditional, you know, the thing that we're trying to criticize or analyze? It doesn't have to be criticized, but trying to explore: can we do it sticking to that, or does there's a form follows function, or
well,
function? You know what I mean?
In my mind.
Yeah,
I like genre films. I think that
yeah, I do too.
It's fine to have movies within that kind of standard genre, and some B movies elevate themselves to a B++. You know,
right? Which this one has done, I think. Yeah,
you know, and it's not until later that some directors took a stab at making Westerns that were, say, A movies.
Right. True.
With mixed success.
True. And some of those are really good too because of that failure, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So here we have it Five Card Stud, our first mini episode, our first 10-minute mini episode. We're into 25 Great. Minutes.
All right, good. That's okay, 25 minutes. That'll help one of our listeners, Bob, and Vox, and a couple other people, you know, and anyone who wants to Google us and just find a movie review, there you go.
Absolutely. So we're going to have this one up on the interwebs as soon as we can. And on your phone, you can, if you've subscribed, it'll come to your phone. And we'll hopefully have more short episodes soon, as well as our regular weekly episodes.
All right. Talk to you soon, Eugene. Okay, thank you so much.
Over and out.
All right. Bye.
Bye.